Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1114. Over at ID10T.com this weekend, which would be April 4th, 2021, we are making available that day for pre-order the official Walking Dead Walker Head polo shirt. It's a red polo shirt with a Walker Head on it. It is official Walking Dead merchandise. So go pre-order that starting this weekend, April 4th, 2021, and then you can have it. You can own it. Also, we have just posted a new t-shirt series, which is, it's called ID10T Horror. And I guess the best way that I can describe it is, imagine horror movie villains depicted as Swedish furniture instructions, I guess is the best way to describe it. You'll know what I'm talking about if you go see it. But the shirts are available in a variety of colors, and we've just put up four or five, I believe, and we're going to post more in the coming weeks. You can get information on all of this stuff if you subscribe to the ID10T email list. Just go to ID10T.com to do that. Thanks for listening to all that. Let's talk about you, the ID10T community, the ID10T community corkboard events at ID10T.com. This is from Tiffany, who writes, I just started a new community design sticker subscription on Patreon, so whoever signs up will be able to pick the theme and help design the piece of art that I carve and paint, Tiffany says. Once a piece is done, everyone will get a sticker of the final piece and a chance to win it. Kicks off March 1st, which is already passed, so that is going on now. You can join at patreon.com/nightcarverdesigns. Instagram is nightcarverdesigns, @nightcarverdesigns. Thank you so much, Tiffany. It's a great idea and a great community-focused idea. What a wonderful idea for a Patreon. So events at id10t.com for anyone else who has a thing they want to promote. This episode is my old friend Alan Tudyk, whom I've known for 20 years now, because we're old and we had friends for many decades. Alan has been in a million things that you have seen or heard, tons of stuff that, I mean, let's talk Rogue One. He was K2SO. He was King Candy in Wreck-It Ralph. He was Wash in Firefly. He has been in, done voices on Rick and Morty, Harley Quinn, Robot Chicken, American Dad. I mean, it's an incredible list of credits that this man has. He also is in a movie called Raya and the Last Dragon that's coming out, and currently is on a series on Sci-Fi called Resident Alien, which looks fantastic, and it just had its season finale on March 31st, but you can watch the entire season on Peacock, which is NBC Universal streaming service. So if you go to Peacock, you can watch the first season of Resident Alien, and I'm pretty sure it got picked up for a second season. So congratulations to Alan Tudyk for that. But I love having Alan on the podcast because he just makes me laugh. He's just a funny guy, super quick, super riffy, and there's a lot of fun riffs in this one. It was an absolute pleasure. So here we go, the ID10T podcast number 1114 with the very funny Alan Tudyk. Roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Alan Tudyk.
How you doing, Chris?
What's happening?
Man, not much.
How have you been?
I've been really good. We kind of moved to Vancouver.
I feel like I've heard a lot of that. People go, we kind of, it's just like, it was sort of that moment where people were somewhere else and they're like, I think we just live here now. I think
that's exactly what happened.
I have friends who did that in Austin. Like, other people are like, oh, it turns out I don't really need to live in LA for any real reason anymore. And so I'm just, this other place is fine, is nice. I'm just going to stay here. We just live here now.
Yes. Are you still in LA?
We are still in LA. We haven't gone anywhere. Although the one
be careful
thing
where you choose to go.
Well, there's no, I mean, there, yeah, exactly. Like, even as things have started to open up, we're like, you know, we could go to
Santa Barbara and go to a hotel. And we're like, but what, you know, here we got our dog. We have, you can get groceries. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
My wife really wants to, has this dream that we're going to eventually just spend chunks of our year in Ireland. So I don't know when that's going to happen, but it's certainly not going to be this month, but at some point, but I hear Vancouver is just damn delightful right now.
Have you spent any time here?
I've spent a lot of time in Vancouver. I've performed up there. It has a great comedy scene. It's a great town. I absolutely adore Vancouver. I just haven't been up there in a handful of years.
I hated it. I hated this place. I hated it. I came up here for iRobot in 2004. I stayed here for 6 months and was like, man, these people, they're so chatty. Canadians are so, everybody wants to chat. And they're friendly, but it's like, it's invasive. They all follow rules. They don't cross on the crosswalk when it says don't walk.
That's good, though. That's
having
good.
Lived in New York, I was just, I took it personally as an affront. Like, what's wrong with you? We all have to walk. And now I love it, man. You know what else they do on crosswalks is when they do cross, especially if it's counting down in the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, they do a little trot to go past. As opposed to LA, where people will just stand in the road to have.
They weirdly do that. They'll step authority. Off the curb and just stand there. It's very strange. I mean, you know, New York is a very pedestrian culture. Yeah. LA is not particularly pedestrian. So that brings its own set of challenges of people don't necessarily know how to be pedestrians in Los Angeles.
I feel like nobody has any power in LA or your power's under threat or your power's just such a big part of being in LA that people who are walking across the street, that is a moment where they're in control. They have power.
Right.
And so they will take their time, read every text they need to read while they saunter in front of your car. Cause they're in charge. In
the moment. Maybe in their head, they're auditioning a character. I'm a crosswalker. And who would this crosswalker be? Well, you know, today that person is someone who's checking their texts. Maybe there's a text they're waiting for from someone. They have to go walk their dog. But then tomorrow it would be a different, you know, now I'm a power walker and they're swinging their arms. So it could just be a lot of character work, Alan.
I guess. I don't know. The power walker I've never seen. It's always, I'm a sauntering, I'm a lethargic, I'm a someone with gout. Those are the characters. I have to really slow walk those few feet they have to go. Oh my
but
God.
In Vancouver, though, it's been pretty, right? Because the quarantines are so strict in Canada that it has probably felt a little, or I'm asking, has it felt at least a little more closer to normal in recent times because they're very strict about it?
People will follow the mask rules and there isn't that whole question that's been going on. It wasn't politicized here. So people will follow the mask rules in stores and things stayed open more or less. Restaurants are still, like all of our favorite restaurants are closed, but we don't go to those. We want that shot and then we'll go do all of the things again. But until right. then, I don't want to roll those dice, man, because it's either, I don't feel anything or the worst.
Or devastating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Torture. So I'm not good in those situations.
And honestly, we are very comfortable homebodies. It is. And, you know, the trick will be how to unbreak that and how to break that habit, that pattern of like, not only do we not have to go anywhere, we kind of can't go anywhere, you know, like of leaving the safety of our home.
I love it. There's a lot of permission to just sit around. It's great. Play video games.
Do you still have a place in LA or did you just give it up?
It's been given back to nature as far as I know.
It's been reclaimed like those old Discovery Channel specials where it's like nature, you know, over several generations, the earth, and it's just all the overgrowth and then the animals nesting.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's coyotes, raccoons, mainly, yeah, possums.
So as far as you're concerned, an asteroid hit California, Los Angeles, and you were just never, you're like, well, that's it. We're not, we can't, everything that was there is there and we're just going to move on. We'll just get new stuff. Well, we don't, I don't wear any of those clothes anyway. It's fine. I don't need any of that stuff anymore.
Isn't that obnoxious? Let's also just buy it.
I was saving from stuff. All those shows. Do you save scripts from shows that you worked on? Do you have a box of old scripts?
I do, but there was a point when I moved and I dumped a bunch of them, which were all of my Firefly scripts. Like what? Like why? Why? Because it was at a time when Firefly didn't seem like it was going to, it was just a show that got canceled.
You know what? Honestly, though, there are things that you will, and I understand what you mean. Like, oh, that's, you know, those were special things. But at the same time, it's difficult to know. It's just difficult to know because you know, like that's where you start getting into hoarding where you're like, I might need this someday. And even though like these shows are special and they, you know, the audiences cherish them. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of fans would be like, you did what? But at the same time, everyone has stuff that survives 1, 2, 3, 5 moves. And that number of things just continues to grow. And you think you might need stuff someday. And you never, it just ever, you never go back to those things. The only time you look at them is when you're moving and you take them and place them in a new thing in your new place that you never look at.
Do you have, yes, that's, I have all of that stuff. I have some really cool stuff too. I've got a t-shirt from the Plano Community Theater that we all wore the same t-shirt. It had Marcel Marceau's face on it for some reason. That was their emblem. And we all wore the same t-shirt when we did our play, The Most Fabulous Fable Factory, I think that's what it's called, The Fable Factory. We did it at the mall, Collin Creek Mall, and it was the first play I ever did. I think it was 11 or 12 years old, and I still have that t-shirt.
That is a very, of course, and it's just one, it's just one shirt. It's not like a box.
And it's so small because I was 11.
Listen, I still have like 5 seasons of Crew jackets from Singled Out. They're in a box. Why wouldn't I save those? I never wore them because that would have been weird, but I'm kind of getting to the point now where I think like, it might actually be really funny if I wear them now, you know,
like
25 years later. Now it's like, it would have been thirsty like 25 years ago, but now I kind of feel like I think I could get away with it. But the unfortunate thing is that the 90s were a period of time where things were very large. Like we didn't wear fitted clothes in the 90s.
Right.
There's a lot of baggy pants, a lot of baggy gas station shirts. And so I think it would be comically large on me, although at one time it probably looked very cool, but now, so I'd be wearing a show that I did in the 90s and it wouldn't fit, so I'm not so sure.
I have a feeling that fit is coming back. It's got to at some point, that it, like where the is, shoulder for it. Way down here.
Yeah.
Oh, it is here. What am I talking? It is here.
Yeah, but if it I'm too old for it now though. Like I think I'm just, you know, from here on out, it's just kind of like, you know, clothes that fit. I don't feel like I can take too many big fashion swings anymore. Cause I talk about this sometimes about how, cause I like, you know, I like my hair, the kind of like, you know, that sort of strategically messed up hair where you purposely mess it up, but it looks like, hey, I just rolled off a campsite. And when you're in your 20s, it looks very cool. But boy, when you start getting older, you just look crazy. Like it doesn't, there isn't anything where it's like, oh, that's so wild. It's like, oh, that guy, he doesn't realize that his hair is all over the place.
Yeah, I have right now, I'm doing a role where I'm not allowed to cut my hair. And I have the just messed up version of my hair is a ridiculous, it's Doc Brown. I mean, I do have some gray coming in too. I just turned 50. Man, I just turned 50.
How is it?
Last night, my wife was talking about somebody she was in a meeting with. And she said, you know, and he had, it was a really smart, fresh idea. And he's older. He's like in his 50s. I was like, baby, I'm 50 in one day. And you can't pull that crap out.
Oh, did you just have a birthday?
Yeah. Yes. Day before yesterday. Something like that. Yes. Thank you.
The day we're recording this is March 18th. So March 17th.
March 16th.
March 16th is your birthday. Yeah. So you're going to cross it before I will, but soon ish going to cross the, Brimley Cruise threshold, right? When everyone kind of was like, you know, when Tom Cruise is still in Tom Cruise form, and it's like, oh, he's the same age that Wilford Brimley was when he did Cocoon. And you're like, what? You know? I watch a lot of old, I fucking love the old Perry Mason show. Really? I watch it. I have terrible insomnia. I wake up at like 3 or 4 in the morning every night. I go in the other room so I don't wake my wife. And I just watch old Perry Masons. And there are actors in there, character actors that you see like on Twilight Zone. Like they just recur on all of those 50s and 60s shows. And people that I think of as elderly, I look them up and it's like, they were 55. You know, it's like you see Burgess Meredith. You're like, he was 55, man? What the? Holy fuck, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I look at you, if you told me you were 38, I'd believe it, or 35, 40, I don't know. Is that just a protection feature that we have because of our age, or we actually do look younger than the previous generation, right?
We do look younger than them. We do because our livers aren't under constant barrage from like liquor lunches and
we're not soaking cigarettes in bourbon and then just smoking 4 packs a day of them.
Yeah. Now that people lived very, very differently. It was awful. We look great, and you look better than that. Somehow you don't age the same way. I've now got new things that I'm coming to terms with. I don't want to point them out, but just like on my, like the skin. And then I look at my dad and I'm like, now I'm studying my dad's face. Like, oh, okay. So there. Yeah. I see. I'm going to get that one.
looking through like a magic mirror of time. Oh, I see. Okay. So I gotta look forward to that.
Yes.
All right. It's a
topographical map.
That skin tag new, or did that, is that in my future? Is that, what's the.
Yeah. Can you get that? Have you tried to fix this on yourself, or that's just you? Do I have to just accept it as well?
I don't. The cruel trick of nature is that as we get older, for a lot of people, the hair on your head will start to thin. But then it like escapes down through your ears and nostrils. Like it's like all of these weird parts that shouldn't be really hairy. It's like, why don't you, can we graft like pieces of our ear onto our head? Does it work that way? I don't understand.
You can get new hair if you want. You can get, if you ever decide, I have a buddy who did this and he got, and I think Matthew McConaughey did it. Because that's what my buddy told me. He's like, McConaughey did it. He looks great. And you can look at pictures of him. And he had like what I'm pointing to now, this receding hairline that they pull like a line of it out here and they put it in here and it grows.
It sounded like you were going to say, a buddy of mine did this in his garage. Like there's
he took his cat, man. And man,
I mean, cat's got a ton of hair. Cat don't need a lot of hair.
Hell
cat,
no.
That hair grow back.
They got so much they're coughing it up in balls, buddy. That's how much hair
they're giving it to you. It's a gift. When your cat cough up a hairball, he like, son, put this on your head. Come on, man, what you doing over there?
Take a hint. Shit.
Yeah. I really thought that was like a home hair surgery thing. I have seen YouTube videos before where people do like, oh, here's I did liposuction on myself, and a guy will do like, he'll put the thing in. It does not look like it's done very well, but it's fascinating, really disgusting, but
no.
Also, yeah. And it's just like, he just pulls it out of his stomach and he creates this thing with a jar and a thing and it goes in and then it's all kind of lumpy. Like it's not, it doesn't look like a healthy thing to do, but I think it was just a, hey, here's a thing that, you know, not that you should do like DIY cosmetic surgery, but there's, you know, there are people out there who are doing it for you on the internet.
I did not know that. That is one that you can, I've seen videos of people getting liposuction and done with by a doctor. It looks like a terrible idea. It looks very violent. And the thing about, you know, plastic surgery, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. So many rich people, they can't do it. So all the money, and you would assume they would get good doctors or have the best doctors available to them, that they end up looking the same, like the same person.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, and in cases, and I, you know, I never begrudge people whatever makes them feel better. And obviously there are some cases if people have had an accident or something that they, you know, want to, you know, dramatically, you know, for their own, you know, for their self-esteem, or they want to feel better and stuff. But there is that kind of like thing where people just get it. And then to me, the thing that's, well, number one, I think people look cool when they age. Like, I just think, you know, everyone, you know, like, because it's, if you kind of take care of yourself, it looks nice. Like there's like a nice natural thing to it. But I think it's like that thing with tattoos where you get one and then all of a sudden you get 1,000, you know, people just start doing that thing. You remember that thing where you're trying to level out your sideburns and you're like, nah, I got, oh fuck. Okay. Now I got to go back to the other one. And then you have no sideburns. It's like, if you lift one thing, it's like, shit, now I got to lift this. Oh, well now that looks weird.
Yeah.
Then it's this like, then all of a sudden it just becomes this whole, you were just trying to spackle in a nail hole, but then you ended up completely drywalling your house. And I think that's where it gets dicey. And I think people get addicted to it.
Well, drywall is another home version of plastic surgery that some have tried and can work. Spackle and drywall. That's
spackle. You know what? You just put a little bit of toothpaste, like right there. It just covers up the hole, you know? That's all you got to do.
2021 is looking up, which means there should be plenty of new opportunities for you to grow your business. Whether you're shifting business hours or hiring more remote employees, one thing that remains unchanged is the importance of having the right people on your team. When you're ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. And to lend a helping hand, your first job post is free. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 30 million members in the UK. And now you can do this all from your mobile device, no matter where the day takes you. That's how LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. When your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. And now you can post a job for free. Just visit linkedin.com/reach. Again, that's linkedin.com/reach to post a job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Did you buy a place in Vancouver, or are you renting your place in Vancouver?
No, we bought a place. We full on did it. Oh,
you're fucking for real.
Yeah. Yeah, we live here. Well, I haven't been home in over a year. Like, we were doing Resident Alien. March happened. Everybody went home. And we've been watching the news and we're like, there's no way America is going to handle this well. Especially because the president at that time was very, you know, there's a lot of anti-science people there, and they handled it even worse than we thought. So anyway, it was spring, it was summer. We're like, this is the best time to be here anyway. And we've been wanting to move out of LA. So we had already had an instinct. I wanted to move to Australia. I want to move to Melbourne. Melbourne.
Oh, wow. Gorgeous. It's gorgeous. I haven't been there in years, but absolutely gorgeous the last time I was there.
Yeah. So we're in love with that place. It's just so far. And then we got here and we're like, wait a second, hold on. We love it here. And we live right by the park, Stanley Park. I'm there every day. I love that place. There are places in there. It's bigger than Central Park. It's the third bigger than Central Park. It is left. It has trails through it, but then there's a lot of trails inside that aren't marked. And there's a lot of little trails that they seem like trails, and then the trail dries up, and then it becomes impassable. It is just like a rainforest, a temperate rainforest that they just left there, that is just aging, and trees are falling, and Oh my God, I love it. I love it. I love it. It's so alive. It's
Are you Canadian?
No, but my wife is. So we have that helping me stay here.
Got it. Yeah.
And I just keep doing jobs. I'm just like, you got a Vancouver production? Give Alan Tudyk a call. He's an actor on hire. He works for a visa.
Well, I would imagine you probably, because sci-fi shoots in Vancouver, so I would imagine you probably shot Resident Alien up there.
Yes. Yeah. That's where we, that's why I was here originally. And now we just got our second season. So I don't have, I mean, now we're going to come home. Now that's the sort of ironic things. We're going to come home because Vancouver, especially of all of Canada, really screwed up the rollout of the vaccines. So we're going to go back home to get inoculated and clear out some of the raccoons. And I don't know.
Fucking the raccoons are going to be playing poker. There's going to be like a fucking mountain lion taking a shit in your bathroom. It's like all this. It's just going to be just a. It's just they literally reclaimed by actually literally reclaimed by nature.
Yeah, yeah. It's a hill house now. It's become part of the hill. But we'll see what we can take and bring back up here. I don't know. Everybody says it's a great, right now people are buying homes in LA. It's a great market for homes in LA.
Yeah. Maybe we'll
just sell it. Why is it a great market for homes in LA?
Why well, because I think, because it, you know, when a lot of the country, I think piling on weather, like bad weather in a lot of parts of the country with being stuck at home, you know, like in LA, we've been fortunate enough to be able to go outside almost the entire time.
Right.
And you know, when you're stuck in your house, I mean, when people are kind of going about their, you know, busy normal lives, they're distracted all the time, but a lot of distractions were removed. And then I think, you know, people were like, oh, I'm stuck at home and the weather's bad and it's depressing and there isn't really anything. So I think a lot of people, you know, kind of surrendered to the weather of Southern, I'm guessing surrendered to the weather of Southern California. Like, well, if I have to be stuck somewhere, at least it's, you know, it's 72 degrees outside. I mean, there really is something to having nice, clear skies, you know, and someone had pointed out a long time ago, well, it's not that LA is a beautiful city. It's just that the sky is blue and that's beautiful. So when people are saying LA is beautiful, they're looking up at the sky. They're not actually, you know,
right.
So it's, you know, but it's, yeah. I mean, we like the pocket that we like our house and we, you know, I think LA is a nice city.
Yeah. I don't think I ever got over my, initial, my early contempt for LA coming from New York.
Well, but also because I think my guess is that, you know, you're a theater guy and you came from a strong acting background and then you come to LA specifically for work to audition and that process sucks.
Right.
You know, like the auditioning television film actor. So you're driving all over everywhere all day, every day, looking for parking and waiting for auditions. And it's anchored with a lot of, you know, like we all have a lot of rejection and a lot of bad stuff and a lot of, you know, seeing a lot of, you know, people not at their, you know, like actors kind of being smarmy. And so I'm sure it just kind of like bakes in and listen,
yeah.
You know, like all of our friends are performers. I don't mean like act, but, you know, if you came here, well, I'm guessing you came here, which is probably in the mid to late 90s, you know, I can understand why you kind of were forced to come here in a way because of work, not because you chose to come here because you thought it was rad.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a different time. God, that was a different time back then, the 1990s in Los Angeles, when you go test for pilots and you'd do all of that whole, yeah, that was a different time. That is when I first got introduced to LA. I actually had an apartment in LA that I was doing a play on Broadway. It was terrible. we were canceled. This is my vocabulary is so LA now. We were closing and somebody said, hey, I got somebody who has an apartment in LA if anybody wants to move to LA. And I was like, I'm done with this theater thing. It's because we all talked. And I flew to LA, started an apartment there, left my apartment in New York, all the stuff there. And then...
Wait, this is a pattern.
I know, I think it is. But then I flew... Well, because hopefully this isn't a pattern, because it got kind of kooky. I came back to New York to do another play, and I was always making excuses to leave LA, and I called a moving company and said, go to this address, you can get the key from my next door neighbor, everything you see inside, pack it up, put it in boxes, and bring it to this address in New York City. I am done with LA. I hate that place. I'm never going back. That place is a ridiculous place. And this moving truck came and I fit two apartments worth of crap into one apartment in New York. And then I got a call to go test for a show called Firefly. And then I never went back to New York. This is a pattern.
I feel like you accumulate stuff and then at a certain point you are done with it. And then you just sort of let the city or nature reclaim whatever is there. If you were to do like a Marie Kondo style show, rather than like picking up stuff and going, does this spark joy? Just go, pick up one thing that sparks joy and then leave. And then someone else will just deal with everything else that's there. And then it's not your fucking problem anymore.
Tune into my new show, Cut Bait and Run. That's, just cut bait. Oh. Yeah, that's what I did.
Boxes of scripts. I'm not really sure. I guess this person was an actor. I'm not really sure. But it is nice to. I would imagine at this point though, you probably feel pretty rooted now, right? Do you feel settled? Do you feel like this is it? We're gonna stay here
in Vancouver.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'm working on my dual citizenship. I am wanting to live here, but I need to go. Once I go back to LA, a lot of stuff is going to become clear. You got to go back and touch base. And when you touch base there, then suddenly you realize, oh, I've always hated it here. Or, oh, we have to stay. Or I see pictures of my place. I have a really cool place in LA. It's very, very cool. Very different from this place. I have taxidermy and weird stuff. You have weird stuff around your house too, I think.
Yeah, we have vintage taxidermy. We have horror movie props. I don't know if you can see in the background, like there's a movie prop from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is it's like we just have this stuff.
Cool. All
over the place.
How cool.
Yeah. So if we just vanished into thin air and someone didn't know us and they came into this house, they'd be like, what did these people do? You know, because it looks like, in some senses, it looks like a weird Victorian science museum.
yeah, that's cool.
Or movie props too. Yeah. So, are you going to bring all that stuff back up to Vancouver with you?
Oh no. This place is it's very different. Has a whole different thing going. We have really nice art and there's no room for, I did buy one recently. I just got this thing. There's an auction thing. You may know about it. Katowiki.
Oh, I don't know this at all.
See, I'm giving this out. Now people are going to know about it. And we're going to be against one another. I just bid on some stuff this morning. So it'll be in my thing. It is a European one, but stuff gets shipped really fast and I never have a problem with it. And there's some really cool stuff. So I got the thing that I just got is, it's a science model of how seeds grow. So it's like from the early 19th century the early 20th century or late 19th century.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. All those old Victorian era anatomical models and
yes. Oh, I
models and
yeah. I got a stack of disease out of a book where there was syphilis. They're like,
you got syphilis from a book? What?
I got yes. I know, and I've been taking Lysol to everything I bring in the house, but this got by me. It's so in the old days before they had photographs, they would paint pictures of these things, which is why these old models, these old medical models and things like that are so interesting to me, because they're art. They were educational tools, but they're art. So these are paintings of people with syphilis, people with not like their genitals. They're like, you can get it on your arms. So I just got a big stack of some syphilis. I got these different how to treat syphilis. I don't know what syphilis is, definitely a big deal all over the place.
And I mean, yeah, it really had a moment, you know, like it really was A-list back in the Victorian times.
Anyone has syphilis. Yeah, it
was like, yeah, it basically was like social media. There, everyone's on syphilis. Were you not on syphilis? Well, then you want a career, right? Well, you gotta get on syphilis. It just sounds like an app from the Victorian time. But all that stuff, you know, you're right. It's because they just had like world class artists painting these gorgeous, you know, whether it was animals or plants or.
Right. Oh, those are great.
Or whatever, and that's a real aesthetic, you know, like the buying and trading of those like rolled up posters. They were on that kind of like wooden dowel, and they sort of unfurl, and you know, and especially, I mean, you get the ones that are in French. Oh, I mean, come on,
yeah,
come on,
yeah. I have one of I bought a of worms. They're like round worms, and it's like all these cool round worms. It's one of the, it's rolled up on the stuff with the wood dowels. It's French. It's the black. It's kind of got a chalky substance. It's kind of like, it feels like you could write chalk on it. It's made of fabric on the back, and I was like, I don't know why I just love this thing. It's just the red. I guess it's the reds and the contrast with the green and the black and this worm and then these little round worms. Then I had it in my office, and then one day I looked, I was like, oh, that's just penises and vaginas. That's all it is.
That's what it turned out to be, or
no, it's just it they look like a bunch of penises and vaginas.
Right.
If you not that my penis has worms. I don't want to.
Okay, because that's what I was concerned about you for a second. Right, so I'm glad.
No, not anymore. Those are gone.
Glad that you do not have genital roundworms.
No, just the syphilis.
Yeah. The syphilis kills any of the worms.
Yeah.
The good news is that the worms really hate the syphilis. So the syphilis keeps the worms out.
Yep.
So I guess, you know, silver lining, I suppose, if you really want to talk about making lemonade, then no worms.
So no worms. That one is not hanging in my house anymore, but it is. It's like an abstract painting of genitalia.
I really think that the you know, a lot of us who are into the that old-timey stuff, there's a real market for it now, and it's gotten expensive. Like, it used to be, you know, you'd find that stuff like in an antique mall. Yep. And like, oh, this, you know, $30 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the markup has been quite dramatic in the last handful of years for that kind of stuff.
The store I bought that worm penis vagina thing was in LA. It was called, it was over on Beverly, I think. I can't remember streets anymore. I've been gone so long. Anyway, I went there and was looking at their posters to see what else they had, and they only had copies. And I said, do you not have the original? She said, we don't sell the originals. And I said, oh, I bought an original here of some worms. And she goes, I don't think we've ever sold those. Like, oh, so you figured out how to just make copies. And
are you thinking of Necromance on Melrose?
No, I sold a bunch of stuff to Necromance. I sold them a wax model of a leg that had smallpox.
What a sentence that you get to say that actually is a thing that happened. You're not just free associating. It's not a riff. it's not a comedy riff. I sold Necromance a wax model of a leg with smallpox. Like, that's a real earnest thing you said. And by the way, I didn't even blink. I'm like, oh, I totally get it. Yeah, I totally get what he's talking about.
That's where I used to get my taxidermied mice.
I wonder if they're still open. I'm not sure if Necromance is still. Mm. But maybe they are.
Yeah. They were.
I just looked it up on Yelp. Yelpers report this location has closed.
Oh,
I know. So who knows? You know, someone hopefully ended up with your smallpox leg.
I'm sure it was a good piece.
And
a very good piece.
Probably had no idea that it belonged to Wash / K2SO. They probably will never know that that's where that came from.
Yeah, it's a pedigree for and whoever the bastard was who had the smallpox, who was sitting for that artist to mold that leg, because it was a very old piece. So I'm pretty sure they were either looking at cadaver with what are the history of these things? That's what blows me away. These things, the history of them.
Yeah, because especially it's, you know, you're talking about a time when people were really making strides, in modern medicine. And so they were very focused on science and very focused on, you know, what ended up sort of becoming, you know, modern medicine. And so it's just a fascinating period, because you really get the sense that they were really learning. Like, they were, it's like there was a real, like, we have to figure this out for humanity vibe that goes along with it. So the history, the weight of that also is part of it, you know.
Yeah. It's
really, you know, like, obviously no internet in the late 1800s. How would anyone have known what this thing would have looked like?
Yeah.
Know what to look out for? Pretty much everything was word of mouth. So how would they know? And so, it's just, when you think about it as a time capsule of the period too, it's really fascinating.
Yeah. But none of that in my new, well, that's not true. I say none of that. I have a model of seeds growing, which is very appropriate for here, because we're right by the park and everything is alive. And
are lush. The seeds syphilitic in any way, or are they just normal seeds?
You know what? It doesn't get to the part where they bloom. The syphilis blooms. You don't see it until until it fully opens.
It gets a bad rap, but it's actually gorgeous. Like, it just, like, the flowering.
We thought it was going to flower, but it opened and it was a sore. Just an open sore.
This syphilis plant. It still trips me out that, number one, that I've known you for 20 years. And also that, and we were very much adults when we met and worked together years ago. But it still, like, bends my brain that you're a part of the Star Wars universe. Yeah. That's still really amazing. Like, is K2SO is obviously, because that film was a very standalone piece.
Yeah.
And self-contained, obviously, because it had to be to sort of set up what it set up. I don't know why I'm talking like I'm afraid of spoilers. I feel like people, you know, if they haven't seen Rogue One now, they probably, you know.
Check it out. There's a reason they haven't watched it. Go check it out if you haven't. It's a really good one. And
do you still do stuff? Do you occasionally record stuff for, like, any of the parks, or do you do any?
No. It's weird. Like, it's something that I feel like Marvel does really well, or strives to do, is incorporate all of their stories into one. You know, if there's an event in a movie, then it affected all the characters and their storylines going forward will reference those things that happened. They don't live in their own pockets of reality so much. They cross over into each other's stories. Star Wars doesn't do that. Their stories are disjointed in a way, whereas the K2SO droid, kind of, he only lives in Rogue One, that model of droid. And he isn't in anything else. So the thing with Andor, that's going to be coming out. That's one of the neatest things about it, that even though I'm not in it the first season, I think it's going to be a world that has K2SO droids. So it'll be cool to see them and see a world that has that droid around. If you could cosplay it easier, it might be in more things. You've got to be really committed to come up with that.
Cool. Like, there's video of a person who did this insane General Grievous cosplay where they're completely in, they've built it onto this like black bodysuit.
Yeah.
And so it allows the Grievous to be bigger than a person, but also move in the way that he moved. So I feel like cosplayers are very resourceful, and I'm sure, number one, people have done it and people will continue to do it. And I also imagine that, The Mandalorian might have ushered in an era of interconnectivity that previously was not necessarily. Right. I mean, Marvel, it's Kevin Feige is the sort of story master. Yep. Who kind of like weaves everything and see, it's like, well, he's a fan and he wants to see all that stuff. So he knows he's coming at it from that place.
Yeah.
And I think for a long time, Star Wars didn't necessarily have that kind of so many years of lore and movies and stuff. And so, but I feel like that's like when it happens, people love it. I mean, when you and I were growing up, those cartoons of like Laugh Olympics where they had all the Hanna-Barbera characters together in one.
Yes!
Oh my God. So you're saying that Huckleberry Hound knows Fred Flintstone? What the fuck? So it, or whatever. So I feel like that's probably changing.
Yes. I think that even between on the Star Wars, the new trilogy of Star Wars movies that they came out with, and I'm not going to know any of the titles because I suck. Between the first, the second, and the third, they came back around.
Well, there's no reason that you couldn't just get someone to CG K2SO into other Star Wars movies, and then you could just voice them.
Voice them.
Pick some scenes and
yeah.
then, like people could fucking do, like cinema quality CG on their iPhones. Someone out there will do that for you. And then you could just voice it and put it on fucking Instagram or something. Who's going to get mad at that? It's like a little known fact. K2SO was actually on Jabba's barge. And then you could just be in the background going, oh my, or whatever. And I think it's, I don't see any reason why you couldn't do that. You're the guy. So I feel like you have a lot of control and maybe you will manifest that in the universe where people are like, hey, it turns out people want to see K2SO and things.
I'm all for it. I'm definitely a fan of that character. He's like a kid. He says the things that nobody else is saying, and he says things wrong and just blurts things out. I love that. I love characters like that. They have so much permission to just be rude. And there's so many funny things you can say if you're given license to say whatever you want. It's fun.
Yeah, but the character was heavily influenced by you as well. I mean, I know you riffed a lot, and so. Yeah. I feel like, whereas if someone played a character that was heavily written, it might be a little more difficult for them. But like I said, you're the droid. So you have a lot of freedom, I think, just for fun satire and whatnot. You could, if you wanted to. And then I think people would go, oh, people really want to see this K2SO. And then
also like create my own thing, like do like a K2 thing. On my own?
You could just do some shorts and then just post them on Instagram. I don't think anyone would, as long as they weren't offensive. Like, I think people
would. I feel like I should listen to you. The last time we talked, I had said that I always wanted to do a King Candy Sings Vaudeville Songs. Because I do the voice of King Candy from Wreck-It Ralph.
Yep.
And And I pitched this to, because when I was little, I had 45 records that would be like you'd have it would be Peter Pan, and then there would be a record that comes along with it. And you read the book, and it goes, and you listen along. And I wanted one of those with just King Candy singing songs of there's. I used to have a Jerry Lewis album where he has all these comedy songs. The book was so much better than the picture. And there are all these kind of wonderful songs that he could sing. And since he was from vaudeville, Ed Wynn was originally a vaudeville actor who was based on. And I pitched it to John Lasseter, and he got a confused face. Like, are you really suggesting this? And then moved away from me quickly. And then I pitched it to him again at another party. I was like, listen, John, really, you got to listen. This is a good idea. It told him, and he did the same kind of like, and then moved away. And you said you should do that.
I think, though, that because of social media, as long as you're not profiting from it, you know, like you technically, it can fall under like parody law. You could just make these things, as long as you're not selling it. I don't know who's going to stop you from making these kinds of fun things and putting them on. Maybe it's something you do for charity, or maybe it's something you do, you know, for just cause you're sitting around Vancouver and you have the voices, and, you know, I'm sure someone would animate something around it or like make the art that goes along with it. So it's like someone makes the 45. I mean, I know a ton of great artists. I could connect you with someone who could make like the 45 album cover, and then you could just do the voices like turn the page. And then, you know, you're like, I don't see any reason why you couldn't do that. You know, like, and what, you know, like TikTok, you know, it's a minute. It's like, you could do something for a fucking minute. You know, like there's no reason why you couldn't do these things. I think people would be delighted. But it would give you more work.
I got time. I think I've got it. Well, I have since you made that recommendation before, I was like, no, I couldn't. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to do that. And I've since a couple of times thought, like, I should have listened to Chris. I think I maybe should have done that. As if once you decide not to, it's completely passed.
I mean, I think, you know, you have a real gift and a power in the fact that you are these characters. So you can just do stuff. You can, you know, and again, as long as it's not anything that's going to upset the company content-wise, I don't think they're going to go, stop it. I think everyone's going to be delighted because it's promoting the thing and it makes people happy and it's fun for you and you're good at it. And, you know,
how about this? When Andor comes out, which will be, I think, next year, I can just get a K2SO action figure and have him critique each episode. I don't know. That could be trouble.
The director's commentary.
Yeah. About him not being in there is a problem. You know,
that's the note that he keeps giving. I mean, the composition is fine. Everyone looks, you know, but again, my main problem is like, where is K2SO? Not enough. Like, that's his whole. There's enough space in the background. They could have fit him in. So I don't know. Why?
He's just got a huge chip on his shoulder about
disconnected. Was there a reason why they didn't reach out to him?
Maybe that's just the first idea. I'll keep going. I'll keep coming up with other ideas. That one seems like it's got a lot of minefields. Not just one minefield, several minefields worth of problems that could explode in my face. So
you do these characters as like, you could do K2SO as like a, you know, like a home renovation show where he just talks about what he would do to a space, you know, like how he would freshen it up, but it's all just like super robotic shit.
I can do that. Okay. All right. This is
weekly. I'm just going to call you and pitch you ideas for stuff to do with your amazing voices.
With my voice.
It's such a great, I mean, it's voiceover work is amazing. And especially to do the kinds of, like, fucking tentpole movies that you've worked on. It's, you know, like you, it really is. It's pretty fantastic.
It is. It's silly. It's silly. John Lasseter in giving, like when I did Wreck-It Ralph, and then, which was just a reading. I was just supposed to do the reading. Somebody had stepped out of it right at the last minute, and I got my agent convinced them that I could do King Candy for the read through. And then John Lasseter said, "It's really good to meet you," after that read through. And then they put me in Frozen and Jennifer Lee, with Jennifer Lee, because she was also working on Wreck-It Ralph. And now she has John Lasseter's job. And so they've just sort of kept me around. And that's so huge. I mean, I'm doing another Disney movie right now. I'm doing Peter Pan. It's a live action. I'm Mr. Darling. And, well, that's not quite how I sound. That's just my generic English accent. Another English accent. And the kids are brilliant. And one of the children was telling me, he's like, "I just can't believe I'm in a Disney movie. And I'm one of the leads. I mean, I can stand back and I can't believe it. I'm in a Disney movie and I'm one of the leads." Like, it was the most beautiful moment. And first of all, he's smartest, and this kid isn't that old, and he has this perspective. He's able to step out of himself and see his life, looking at it from another perspective. He's got so much more on the ball than I ever had when I was 12. And, but that means something. Disney movies mean something. These big movies, they mean something to kids. Oh my God. It's huge.
Think about how influential, you know, how influential those movies were to us. I mean, like I subscribe to a lot of, just a thing that older people do, subscribe to a lot of retro stuff on Instagram and just see like the, you know, that wonderful world of Disney intro, you know, where I felt like, oh my God, it's Sunday night. I, you know, whatever this movie is, oh, it's the Shaggy DA, you know, or whatever. Like those, that, like the feeling, it just cements in your core being, and whatever's going on, you can put that on and you hear the music and you see the colors and you see, you know, Tinkerbell flying up to the castle and, you know, like all the sparks flying out, and you just feel okay. Like, it, you know, like whatever is going on in your life. And so, yes, it's incredibly powerful as a child because it expands your imagination and it really starts to give you the basic templates and understanding of storytelling and, you know, your connection to characters. But then also it's a gift that reaps rewards throughout your entire life when you're able to go back and watch it again.
Yeah. I need to subscribe to that thing. The retro, just retro stuff on Instagram.
I'll send you links. There's a bunch of them. Like there's a bunch of them that, and now Instagram's algorithm has caught on to that I'm into this shit. So it's constantly just feeding me like, you know, retro Disney stuff from the, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s. And so I'll send you a bunch of the stuff. Cause it's absolutely delightful.
Nice.
By the way, I have to watch Resident Alien. I didn't even realize you were in the show until we're coming on the podcast, and I was like, "Oh my God, Alan's in that!" So I'm very excited to see it because the premise sounds fantastic. To me, it's like, "Oh yeah, this is an Alan Tudyk role of an alien who comes to destroy the planet and then just kind of ends up observing." It's, I don't know, it feels like it was tailor made for you.
It is in my
comedy.
Yeah, and it's a comedy. Yeah, it is in my wheelhouse. It's my it's one of my things. I feel like he's kind of, because he's in, similar to K2SO. He says things because he's an alien. He doesn't know. He doesn't have any social skills, so he'll just say things that he thinks and feels. You know, he'll just walk out of a room without saying goodbye. He's just constantly inappropriate. He's also here to kill everyone. So he's bad. He's here to kill everyone. That is bad. That definitely falls under the bad. But he's funny. He's an idiot. He's a moron. There's a lot of physical comedy in it. He's stupid about humans. He wasn't supposed to be here. He was just supposed to drop off a bomb, kill all the humans, fly away. That was it. But he crash landed. And now he has to interact with them and figure out what humans are and how to survive until he can get his spaceship repaired and get off of the planet and then kill everybody. So
to me, this what I'm thinking about, I don't know why I'm thinking of this, but it reminds me a little bit of that fish out of water, like sci-fi thing, like Greatest American Hero, where it's like, oh, they give him this super suit, but oh shit, he's lost the instructions and now he's stuck with it. And he's just got to figure it out. Like, I love like weaving a sci-fi element into that kind of a story is, I will always love that idea.
That is, yeah, that is, that's this. And this kid can see me as an alien. There's the one kid. I have this way to reconstruct my the molecules around me so everybody sees me as this human, Harry Vanderspiegel, this guy I kind of accidentally killed. And I take his identity. And but this kid sees me. And it's a problem. So I have to kill him. But what it that's my plan. I have to kill him. He becomes a really good nemesis. But the cool thing is, in watching the show, you see me as the alien. But then whenever the kid's around, he's looking at me, you see me as the alien. So you're always reminded of, oh God, yeah, this is an alien. He's got big black eyes. He's got a little sheen on him. He looks kind of like an octopus. He's got some kind of octopus. That was what the alien comes from, a sort of octopus race. And so it's fun to put, yeah, play. And it's
I was going to say, ironically, this character just left his home on his own planet to just be reclaimed by nature. Very Alan Tudyk move. He just relocated. He just suddenly relocated.
There's a lot of syphilitic art back on his own planet that he's just willing to walk away from.
Oh, syphilitic art. For some reason, I thought you said, it's got a lot of syphilitic heart. What? Yeah, it's like...
It's got... 4 stars. A lot of syphilitic heart around this new sci-fi venture.
I don't know why I heard that. I was like, syphilitic heart? Yeah, just... 4 swords for an alien.
It has a lot. It's a bad country song. I got a syphilitic heart for you.
That's it. That is a fucking, like, that's a bluegrass song from the late 1800s. That is absolutely a bluegrass song. Now I feel like we have to write syphilitic heart.
And have King Candy sing it.
It's just like just a traveling singer, and he's just singing about all of his maladies, and he has all of them. He's got smallpox leg. He's got a syphilitic heart.
Black lung.
Well, yeah, black lung. He's got all of it. All of it. This is a great idea. Again, you know, every time I talk to you, I feel like we come up with a lot of great ideas that maybe are just great for just us. But yeah. I feel like a small percentage of people would also enjoy the weirdness.
I think so. I want to write a musical podcast about musicals that don't exist. So this could be one. This could be one about it.
A different musical that doesn't exist.
Yeah, they're musicals that got lost, that slipped through the cracks of time, that this guy has discovered and goes back over and with found recordings and things like that, reacquaints everyone with this lost gem of a musical.
That's a great idea. Sounds like a tremendous amount of work.
Yes.
Every episode you're writing a new. So is it like a half hour and it's like segments of songs, or is it like full?
I think the way to do it, the way that I'm truly approaching it, because I am writing this now. I guess do you share things you're writing? Or do you just have to? I guess I am. It is a podcast. I want to make it as a podcast because it would be expensive to make as a half hour.
Right.
To put on a production, you need the sets, you need everything. So need to see if it works first on a smaller budget. So I could do it as a podcast. It'll be like an investigative podcast. that where they're uncovering a thing and finding it, and you have all the songs and you have, yeah. So I'm working on that right now.
You're cut with interviews or people are like, I don't know why anyone thought that anyone wanted to hear about syphilis in the heart, but at the time we were just re-expressing what we were going through, you know, like one of those types of things.
And it hit the zeitgeist like you wouldn't believe.
It turned out there were a lot of hearts with syphilis out there. We didn't realize that the syphilis could get into the heart, but there we were. We were syphilitic millionaires.
And this is my model of a syphilitic heart made of wax.
I'm going to pass this down to my great-great-grandson, whose name I suspect will be Alan Tudyk. He's going to play an automaton. Wait a minute. So yes, it's one of the psychic powers that comes with the syphilitic heart. I feel like this podcast needs to happen, and you know enough incredibly talented people that it would be absolutely amazing. Are you going to write the music? Do you play music?
I wrote a musical, a fake musical with a guy named John Dinerstein, and he's great. He can do anything. He's like one of those people that does a lot of improv stuff that works where, well, you'll get an idea for a bluegrass musical called The Syphilitic Heart, and then he'll like immediately starts playing.
Figure it out.
Yeah, he starts.
All the different genre musical structures and whatnot.
Yeah, and it's like, and the overture starts, and he, without thinking, starts going. So he's great, and he has good lyrics, and so I do know people.
I really hope this is something that you are able to manifest. I constantly enjoy talking to you, and I feel like I need to just poke at you every once in a while to be like, "Hey, how's the thing going?" Because I just want to know if it's on track.
Okay.
Make sure.
Okay, I have signed up for a writing group, which is mainly just a way for me to have deadlines, because I'm the type of guy who'll go like, I can do this other thing with my
time. Oh my God, I need to know about this, because I'm the same. I can't write without a deadline, because I just feel like I need the structure. I need the structure and the accountability.
Yes.
I don't just do it to do it. How's the group set up? I need to know more.
It's 8 to 10 pages every 2 weeks, which is not much. But it is always by like week one, I'm like, oh God, dang it. 10 pages, man. Especially if you're writing something like this thing, because it's a lot of descriptive, because it will be a podcast. So it's a lot of like, almost like a novel, a lot of the narration.
That font about up, things. Triple space it, you know, you'll get to your 10 pages in no time.
It's a guy named Pete Goldfinger who's a.
I know Pete.
You know Pete? Yeah, Pete.
Yes, Pete. Pete. You know, Pete's wife Jen and I did House of a Thousand Corpses together.
Oh.
I've known them for 20 years, and I know Pete went on to make Piranha 3. He wrote Piranha 3D, which was fucking great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pete, and then Jillian Vigman. Do you know Jillian Vigman?
Yes, of course.
Really funny lady.
He's married
to Amy Acker.
Jillian,
Amy Acker's in it.
Amy Acker. Yes. Yes. I know all these people. Jillian's married to Dave Gibbs, who I did Rock of Ages with, and who apparently, like, he's an incredible musician. Oh, cool. Who's opened a bunch of really great restaurants. So I know all these people.
Right. And Jillian's one of the funniest people I've ever met.
So funny. Jillian, she is an incredible improviser. Like, so fast, so unbelievably fast. That's a great group. You're in a great group. Please. Yeah. I love this group that you're
okay. With. All right. All right.
Writing stuff together, or is the kind of thing where you all write your thing and then sort of pitch like
yeah, share it. We share it. And then we all like comment on each other's shit.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's there. Come on aboard. We need a team name. We need a name. A group. The Scribes. That's terrible.
Syphilitic Hearts.
I need 2 weeks to come up. I need a deadline to come up with a title for the group. The Syphilitic Hearts.
The Syphilitic Hearts.
Syphilitic Hearts Club. We are. I bet Jillian will like it.
It sounds like a romantic Netflix comedy. The Syphilitic Hearts Club. It all takes place in like 1890, but it's just like a straight up romantic comedy with contemporary jokes, but it just happens to take place in like 1818. I guess that was sort of another period, which was my friends Ricky and Natasha made this amazing show for Comedy Central called Another Period. And that's basically what it was. Like upstairs, downstairs comedy, but just with all kind of contemporary jokes and every funny person you could imagine in it. This is great, Alan. I'm very happy for you that you figured out a creative structure. That's a very difficult thing to pin down, to motivate. And I'm also excited to watch your show.
Yes, man. I think you're going to like it. It's Chris Sheridan who writes it, who created it, came from Family Guy. And so he has a comic muscle that's very, I don't know, it's very strong. And his humor, I don't anticipate it. I don't see it coming a lot of times. And that's rare and fun.
That's a good, I totally understand what you mean. I don't anticipate it because when you kind of live in a comedy world, you're always sort of, oh, I see how you got there to there. Okay, yeah, I see that, right. You know. And so to be able to be surprised is a great thing when you've seen and worked in comedy so much that that's where you know something's really special. Like, oh, I couldn't track that. I don't know where that.
Yeah, man.
From that person, I don't, you know.
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah, when you don't see the setup, you're getting the punchline before you even realize you were set up for it. It's great.
Well, I want to make sure that people know that Resident Alien is on Sci-Fi, and the first season ends on the 31st of March, I think.
Yes, I think it sounds right.
And you're working on season two? They're shooting season two?
We just got a season two announcement yesterday.
Nice.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
Oh, work coming up. That's the best feeling in the world.
I know. And we'll get some pandemic shots and then we'll have a little time before we start season two to maybe go on vacation somewhere, maybe go scuba diving. That's what we like to do with our time. My wife and I, we go find coral reefs that are still alive and just get surrounded by that just abundance. It's brilliant.
Is there anything else you want to plug or promote?
Oh, I'm in a show called Devil May Care, which is now on after. It's an animated show where I play the devil on Sci-Fi. So now it goes Resident Alien and then Devil May Care comes on afterwards.
Oh, my God. You're ruling Sci-Fi at the moment.
It's weird. It's not. It wasn't a plan, but it's like Devil May Care. Like was a completely different thing that came from a different. Yeah, sure. I'll audition, and then we did it, and it's coming out at the same time. And now they're like, if you liked Alan Tudyk on Resident Alien, tune in next.
Stick around.
Yeah, for your
Tudyk Tuesdays. It's not on Tuesdays.
Yeah, it's on Wednesdays. But it's a twofer of Tudyk. Definitely we get the twofer.
But then you're also in Raya and the Last Dragon.
Oh, yes. If you saw Alan as the devil, go over to Disney Plus and he plays a bug.
You need to be your own announcer for your own, just like a network TV announcer, but just for like, and if you still need more Tudyk in your syphilitic hearts, then stick around over to Netflix and watch blah, blah, blah. And then this. And then if you're like, oh, my Tudyk entree was great. Where's my Tudyk dessert? Then stick around the guy's just constantly stick around.
Here's the link for his TikToks where he's doing performative art.
If you haven't had enough of that, Alan Tudyk will come to your house. He'll leave all of his stuff at home and he'll just live at your house for a couple of years. And then don't get attached though, because he's going to leave you and let the earth reclaim you. So stick around. I adore you. I love seeing you. I absolutely want to stay in contact, and I just want to hear how all these things pan out.
All right, man.
Fun comedy ideas pan out.
All right. Well, hopefully you'll come aboard our syphilitic heart. I'll mention it to Pete, and then he'll bug you about it.
God, you know, I really hope all of a sudden I feel the pressure of like, a couple years ago, I wanted to take some Berklee online guitar classes, and I thought this is going to be great. This is going to give me the practice structure I need. So I start taking it and I get the first week's assignment. I go, fucking great. I got a week to do this. Day six. I haven't done it yet. Fuck. I start trying to do it. Turns out it's very hard. I fall behind. I ask for an extension. They give it to me. I don't meet that deadline. Like it just, and I just feel like, the pressure. And then I just avoid, and I'll go play Animal Crossing on Switch. So I hope that I am able to live up to the expectation and actually it is
an aim low situation there. Just aim low. That's what I embrace, aim low when it comes to writing and with that group. And I feel like it's okay.
It's like the I'll just be looking at a blank page going, oh, so this week this is a swashbuckling tale of a Lhasa Apso who discovers that he is a wizard. And boy, when you wait to, I can't wait to tell you how this one turned. I'm just going to be the whole time.
Chris, you need to not aim so low. I mean, when we say low, we don't mean that far.
Aim low. Don't aim for the basement. Just aim for like low, but not. Yeah.
The vestibule. Get on the first floor.
Aim low, but get on the first floor. That's a motivational poster. If you like that motivational poster from Alan Tudyk, stick around. Let the earth reclaim it and move to Canada. Well, I hope to see you soon. And thank you for being here in your living room.
Yeah, man. Well, this is actually, yes, we'll just say it's my living room. This is my bed. This is where I spend most of my time. This is where I write. It's just a low headboard. So
I see that. Yeah, I thought it was a sofa. I thought you were on a sofa.
Looks like a sofa, but it's a low. That's all the furniture here is very low. It's the Vancouver way. It's the whole. That's the look.
No high furniture.
Yeah, no high furniture. That's.
Sorry, you can't have any high furniture here. Okay?
That's L.A. Yeah, come on, hey. We're on the West Coast. Say hey. They don't say. It's pretty. It's a beautiful day. Hey.
Hey, that furniture is pretty high there. Hey. Well, yeah, but we're gonna cut it down and. Okay.
I'll help you if you need a hand.
All right,
hey, man. Good to see you, Chris.
Good to see you.
Yeah. Cheers, all buddy.
Right. Bye. Right.
Bye.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.